Out along River Road in Elbert County, about a mile from State Road 17, there's a log cabin. It's part of a county park, and it sits back off the road in a remote grove of trees. It's a quiet spot on most days. The cabin, which is, and we're kind of guessing here, is about 400 square feet and serves as a modern-day replica of the home of one of Georgia's most mythical figures. The original home where that mythical figure, Nancy Hart, raised 8 children, yes, 8 children, was, according to records, about a mile away. It's where she lived and farmed, largely without the help of her husband, Benjamin, who was often away at war during the American Revolution. It's where she became a renowned herbalist, with an extensive understanding of remedies, plants, and all of their medicinal values. But the cabin, small, plain, and unassuming, is a convenient contradiction to the woman who called it home. Because Nancy Hart, and every single description of who she was and what she was capable of, is not small, is not plain, and is certainly not unassuming. Because in the 18th century, the Georgia wilderness and all those who lived out there most certainly knew who Nancy Hart was. Welcome to the Marked Podcast. Across Georgia, there's more than 2,000 historical markers that tell the story of a person, place, or an event from our state's past. And our digital video series explores a select few of those from Georgia's revolutionary history. And in this podcast, we're expanding on that with additional voices to help bring out the stories of these markers and the context of what they tell us about our state. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Marked, the podcast. I'm Andrew Iden, the executive producer of the Marked Project here at Georgia Public Broadcasting, where we're exploring Georgia and the people, places, and moments that really tell the bigger story of our state. And we're doing it all through the lens of the more than 2,000 historical roadside markers across Georgia that you've probably seen and either stopped to give them a read or, like a lot of people, looked at them, wondered what they said, and got along with your day. And when the process began of identifying markers that would make for good episodes of this project, the choices were difficult. And there's plenty of compelling stories and compelling characters, but there were a couple that were just no-brainers. And on today's episode, we're going to talk about one of those no-brainers. If you've seen our video episode on the incomparable Nancy Hart, you know she was, without question, one of the most revered and feared people on the Georgia frontier. And as we say in the episode, she's a woman who has gone from folktale to legend to almost mythical status. And we're going to get into all of that, but first I need to introduce the two people joining us today to work through Nancy's story. Our first guest is a professor of history at the University of North Georgia. He has taught history at the University of West Georgia as well as Florida State University. And he was the man tasked with writing the new Georgia Encyclopedia entry on Nancy Hart. And he's the author of Samuel Elbert and the Age of Revolution in Georgia. And if you've seen our video episode on Nancy, you'll recognize his voice. Dr. Clay Utz, thank you so much for joining us today.
All right. Thank you.
She is a professor emerita of history at Augusta University, where she is also the director of the university's Center for the Study of Georgia History. She has also served 2 terms as president of the Georgia Association of Historians. And she has a PhD in history from the University of Georgia, naturally. And you'll hear her great insight on this podcast in future episodes as well. Dr. Leanne Caldwell, thanks for being with us today.
Glad to be with you, Andrew.
So I like having the two of you for this conversation specifically, because this is, without question, one of the favorite episodes of mine and the folks that have been working on this project with us. Nancy Hart is larger than life in every sense of the word. But before we get into some of the specifics of Nancy's story, I want to try to get our audience to understand what the Georgia backcountry was like in the 1700s.
Nancy and her family head south, and they settle in Elberton. And Northeast Georgia at this point is very much the frontier. It is the wild, wild country.
You had the wilderness dangers, bears, and everything else.
There are periodic raids from Native peoples because there are some who didn't want to give up their land. And so sometimes people moved, but a lot of times people fortified themselves. They built kind of palisade forts around their homes and outbuildings. And so when you read about the revolution in the Georgia backcountry and you hear about, you know, all these forts, you know, they're really just people's farms with some palisades around them in most cases. And so people are growing their crops. They're growing sometimes tobacco, which was the cash crop they knew from the places they had come. And they're trying to be self-sustaining. So it's not an easy life.
You had to be a tough person to survive on that frontier.
And Nancy fits the mold of the frontier perfectly. She's reportedly 6 feet tall. When she was a child, she had smallpox, and so some of that scarring was still present as an adult. She sort of fits in with this rugged needs of the wild frontier. And the descriptions we also have of Nancy Hart also mention her wild red hair. And her husband is Benjamin Hart, and he at this time is in the military, and he serves under Elijah Clark, key military figure at this point. Since he's in the military, he's gone a lot. And so this leaves Nancy home alone with her 8 children, who happen to be 6 boys and 2 girls.
One of the things I've learned in the process of this project, and especially reading about Nancy, is that there's a lot of truth. There's also a lot of legend when it comes to the stories of Georgia in the revolutionary period, and especially in the backcountry. And I'm going to tee this up to either one of you, really. But can you, as people that have studied this era and do the research and spend the time reading what we know and trying to figure out what we don't know, can you talk a little bit in broad terms about truth and legend as it relates to the revolutionary period in Georgia?
Well, I would say that a lot of what we historians often do is try to tamp down the legends a little bit to get to the truth. And that has certainly been the case with Nancy Hart, going back to when history became professionalized and they started relying on evidence, documentary evidence, then kind of pulling apart what was or wasn't true about the Nancy Hart story. I mean, there was a period where some people argued she probably was just a legend, never really existed. And so it's kind of interesting to look at the ups and downs of the Nancy Hart story, because sometimes she's very popular and sometimes it's kind of quiet and you don't see people talking a lot about her.
So Clay, I don't want to get too far before we're talking about some of the things that make her legendary. So Clay, if you don't mind sort of walking us through what we know about Nancy and that legendary kind of status, folklore, folk legend that she is, and then I'll kind of touch base with you on the other side about some of this legend stuff. But can you give us kind of the nuts and bolts about what makes her such a big character in this period?
What makes her a big character? One thing is she's a woman alone on the frontier that we were discussing, in a cabin, in a savage frontier environment that has loyalists running around and wild beasts running around. And the first big story that we know about her takes place in that environment. And she has a little child with her. There are all kinds of things about her. And some of it likely maybe is legend and some of it is not. But I think this one that I'm fixing to tell is true, because there's a little bit of some proof to go along with it. That she was out there one day during the revolution. This would have been in 1780. The British took Georgia in December 1778, and this would have been in 1780. It had been after the Battle of Kettle Creek. Well, it was in 1779, actually, after the Battle of Kettle Creek. And John Dooley had been murdered already by some loyalists, and she was out there at her cabin with her child. Her husband was off in the militia. Her sons were off in the militia, so she was by herself. And these loyalists come up looking for a patriot that Nancy was actually hiding in the Broad River behind her house. And she said, I don't know what you're talking about. And so the loyalists will not leave. And they told her that they were hungry and that they wanted to eat. And one of them shot her prized turkey. And that set Nancy off. So you never wanted to set Nancy off. Native Americans at some point had set her off. And among them, she had got the nickname Wauhatchie, which means war woman. And so she was mad. But she was all out there now by herself with six loyalists with her daughter and in a tense situation, wondering what to do. And while she was cleaning the turkey, she told her daughter, her name was Sookie, to go get the conch shell by the well and go off into the woods where we can't hear you and blow the conch shell. That's like the sirens to get help. And meanwhile, Nancy, to deal with the loyalists, decided that what she can do is get them inebriated. Well, she had some wine, maybe blackberry wine, muscadine wine, something like that, frontier wine.
You got to do what you got to do on the frontier, right?
You got to do what you got to do. And but her ploy worked, because after a little while, the loyalists were drunk.
So now that the Tories are properly drunk, Nancy sends her daughter Sookie out to get a bucket of water, which is just a ruse. Sookie is actually going out to alert others. A little while later, Nancy notices that the Tories have left their guns stacked in the corner of the cabin, and they're not paying attention to what's going on around them. And so Nancy starts moving the guns through a hole in the wall, just passing them through. One of the Tories eventually does notice her, but at this point, Nancy has one of the last guns, and she threatens to shoot the first one that moves.
If there's anything we know about Nancy Hart, is that she will do anything to protect her family. And for some of these Tories, this is not going to end well.
And they stood up from their table, and she fired her weapon and killed one. And another one protested. She shot him, killed him. And before long, help came. And they was just shocked to see those two dead loyalists on the floor and the others with their hands up. Nancy had subdued them all by herself. And they said, well, what do you want to do? You want to shoot them too? And she said, no, let's hang them. So they hogtied them and took them off into the woods and hung them. Now, here's the evidence. Years later, they were building a railroad some distance from Nancy Hart's house. And it was maybe, I don't know, 2 or 3 miles. But anyway, they unearthed some shallow graves. So the graves would have been, whoever did this, they did it in a hurry. And it was 6 skeletons in the graves. And they had some buttons and things on it to date the skeletons back to late 18th century revolution. So that would be some evidence there to go along with the folk tale story, you know, to make it seem like, hey, that actually did happen. She could pull it off. She had all of the things inside of her to pull off something like that. So yeah, that's one of the tales.
Right. And so with that story in mind, which as you rightly point out, there's, you know, there's evidence there, right, that would seem to suggest that was a real thing that occurred. I do want to get your thoughts too on the conversation between truth and legend and sort of how they coexist in the revolutionary period, right? Because obviously the Nancy Hart story over the years has sort of grown. I'm just curious what your perspective is on that as somebody who studies this stuff, sort of how the interplay between those two things works.
I think you got to have proof on some of these things, but I think there's a lot of truth behind these myths.
Well, I think you can embellish stories and folklore where you're not supposed to embellish the truth. So sometimes the stories can be more interesting than just plain facts can be. And so I do think the legends and the folklore tell us something about the time. They also tell us, depending on how popular they are in various time periods, something about the times later that either accept or question some of these things.
in a lot of ways, I think Nancy Hart is also a composite too of all of the things women had to deal with during the revolution, raising the children, living alone because the husbands were oftentimes gone during the war, establishing some relationship with the Native American population, dealing with the men that would come to where they lived and sort of have this dynamic. So, you know, would it be accurate to say that Nancy Hart in a lot of ways is sort of a composite of all of the things of a number of different women and all the things women had to deal with during the revolutionary period, especially in the frontier?
I think that's fair. And, you know, she had to be resourceful too. When you were saying all of that, I was thinking that she was a great herbalist. She knew her herbs and things from out the forest for medicines and stuff like that. So I think that's an accurate portrayal of her.
Absolutely. And I'll make a point about women's position in society then, because as a married woman, Nancy would have been a femme covert, which meant that once she married, she did not have a legal identity herself. She was considered to be basically one with her husband. So in the revolution, what that means is women were considered to be on whichever sides their husbands were on. So if a Tory comes to her house, she's obviously, and I'm not saying that she wasn't a patriot, but I'm saying women were considered to be whatever their husbands were. And even the other armies recognized that. Each other's armies recognized that. They have all of these responsibilities, but they don't have a lot of autonomy in terms of how they think about things or what they decide to do. They are dependents totally on their husbands.
I'm curious if, she was also a spy, and from what we know, do we know if, was this a common occurrence for women to sort of act as a spy for the patriot cause? And what do we, I guess I'll kick this your way, Clay, what we know about her as a spy and sort of what that work entailed.
I know about her as a spy is that when the loyalist army under Boyd invaded Georgia in February 1779, that she dressed up like a man and kind of went in and hung around the loyalist camp or was in circles with them to get information, and that she fed that information to John Dooley and Elijah Clark, and that helped to set up the Battle of Kettle Creek. So she pulled off her spy work pretty good and didn't get caught. So that's what it.
I presume that being caught would have meant death, correct?
For a man, it would. I don't know what it would have meant for a woman.
Interesting.
Leanne, have you come across that anywhere?
I have not come across a woman being executed like that, again, because she was not considered to have her own ability to make a choice about where she was and what she was doing. So I haven't run across a woman being executed.
Yeah.
I mean, you hear, especially more in the North, I think, you do hear about women being raped by, especially British soldiers.
Ooh, right.
But I'm not familiar with women being executed.
So. If a man was caught being a spy, both sides executed him. I mean, you got Nathan Hale for an example. Major Andre is another example. So they would execute the spies.
Imagine raising 8 children at home, all alone, and between feeding them, growing crops, and all that comes with living basically on the frontier. This next story is just one of the parts of the Nancy Hart legend.
So while she's running a household, while she's raising 8 children, while she's hunting, while she's making a bunch of medicines, Nancy Hart gets herself involved in the Revolutionary War in Georgia. The ferocity of Nancy Hart was not unknown to the British. They were known for keeping an eye on her cabin.
The story says that one day she was at her cabin with her daughter. Sookie was her name. And that Sookie saw someone's eyeball through the door, right? Little crack in the door. And she told her mama about it.
Nancy and the children are making soap at the time, which involves boiling, scalding hot water.
I think we all know where this is headed, right?
And she picked up that ladle of hot boiling water or soap, whatever it was, and went over to that crack and just flung it and heard the guy on the outside, ah!
And ultimately, he is hogtied and hauled off to the local militia as a prisoner of war.
Clay, I want to ask you, sort of as we kind of come to the end here, when you look at Nancy Hart's life, one of the things that really is interesting to me, one of the chapters of her story, because when you look at her life, it's like she's led, you know, 5-6 different lives. One of the things that jumps out at me is sort of how, you know, she goes into religion. She was and this should surprise no one, she was a fiery and vigorous, you know, Christian. And that's the stories about her certainly include that part of her life. Can you talk to me a little bit about what that meant and what that was in her life?
Well, the organized religion did not come up there where she is or where she lived in the Broad River Valley. It didn't get up there. The first Baptist churches up there were 1788, and there were some Methodist societies scattered up and down through there, but no Methodist church. And there is the story, George Gilmer, he wrote sketches of early settlers, and he claimed to have known, you know, all this stuff by Nancy, because George Gilmer was born, what, 1792 or something like that. He couldn't remember all these things. There's no way. But he did say that she found religion in the 1790s, and it was probably at one of these Methodist societies that she wanted to go inside the building wherever they were, but they wouldn't let her go in because she had a reputation. And other people knew about her reputation. She was fiery, and they had locked the door, but she kicked it down, and she went in anyway. And so they just let her sit, and they accepted her, and she found the Lord. And Gilmer wrote that once that happened, that she fought the devil as hard as she had always fought the loyalist. And so she became a strong Christian. This would have been in the 1790s at some point.
And, you know, when it's the end of her life, she's, you know, she goes with her, I believe it's her, her son, and they move back to Kentucky. And the things I've read are sort of like, she sort of, you know, assimilates into the world in Kentucky and sort of lives out her life in this sort of, you know, mild mannered way. And I'm like, I got a hard time believing that based on everything that we know about her. And it's funny that you use the word that she was accepted by the Methodists. I tend to think it might have been more of a, they really didn't have a choice. So my last question to both of you, and it's something I always like to explore with these characters, is what is sort of the legacy of Nancy Hart in Georgia? I mean, obviously she has, you know, Lake Hartwell, Hart County, the Nancy Hart Highway, her name is on things. But sort of what's the lesson or what's the legacy of her life and her story in the grand scheme of things as we sort of look back on it, you know, 200 plus years later?
I think that her story spreads out among all women that lived at that time, that her story is part of their story about what it meant not only to live during the Revolution, but also on the frontier. And her big legacy, I mean, she's a product of the frontier. So I think that's one of her huge legacies to the future.
I totally agree with that. I do think that she's important for those reasons and for the reason of bringing women into the story of the Revolution in Georgia, that they were there and they were part of it and they contributed to it, whether it was in quiet ways like keeping the home fires burning, that whole expression of hearth and home, raising the children, the next generation, or whether it's someone like Nancy showing that women, in spite of all of the parameters that they couldn't break, that they did sometimes act with agency beyond what people expected them to do. So I think that's part of the legacy too.
I've come to believe that while Nancy Hart is incredibly unique, I have to think that there were hundreds of Nancy Harts across the frontier, because they had to be. They had no choice. It's what survival required, right? Thank you so, so much for your time today. I think that having these conversations and learning about these characters who, for a lot of people, they don't know who they are, and understanding, you know, sort of the broader picture of Georgia through the markers, through the stories, is a fascinating thing to do. And so I appreciate you both for being such a big part of it.
You're welcome. I enjoyed it very much.
I did too. Thank you.
Thank you. Marked the Podcast is written and hosted by me, Andrew Iden, and produced and edited by the GPB podcast team. Jeremy Powell, Miranda Hawkins, and Mark Davenport. And Sandy Malcolm is the Senior Vice President of Content.